Hi, I'm Neil Stavem. I want to thank you for listening to this podcast from Connecting Faith. There are many more podcasts available at our website, myfaithradio.com. And your support makes this possible.
Real conversations about how we live out our faith every day. Welcome to Connecting Faith.
Hi, Neil Stavem.
Great to be along with you. Thanks for tuning in. Ted Ross at the controls. Carissa Rogers is at the phones. Ted, one of the emails in my inbox this morning was titled, "Now What?"
Huh.
Which is probably a sentiment many people are asking or thinking on this day after the election.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's a question that's best answered when we've put some thought and preparation into our response, which is what John Stonestreet is going to be talking about today. What will surely be coming for all of us at some point or another, in some form or another, is the need to explain why we believe what we believe. And to do that in a winsome, caring way should be our aim as followers of Christ.
Yeah, there's a lot of vitriol I see on social media right now for people that are on different opposing views. It's just continuing, maybe even more so. So as a body of Christ now, there's so much more of a need almost to reach out to those that are hurting or in pain. And those that are just filled with anger, really, bring a healing touch to them.
1 Peter 3:15, right? So always be ready to give an answer for the hope that lies within you. So we need to be, first of all, hopeful, and then be ready to give an answer. So we'll get to the point in a moment. By the way, if you need a window cling to replace one of your political bumper stickers, we just got a supply. It's a new Faith Radio window clings, and you could sign up for one by signing up for our new listener packet.
Yeah, that's easy to do. Just go to myfaithradio.com, and you'll find the link right there on our main page. It's one of the scrolls, myfaithradio.com.
But that question, now what, may be fresh in your mind if you recently experienced a loss. Maybe it's a loss of a loved one. Maybe you are heading into the holidays as a widow for the first time, and just that's going to add a layer of complication that maybe we don't know how to navigate. Well, thankfully, Miriam Neff is going to advise us on managing loss, having realistic expectations, looking forward during the weeks ahead. Miriam is founder of Widow Connection, and she's going to join us in a moment. I encourage you to stay tuned for a great conversation ahead on Connecting Faith.
Can you explain why you believe what you believe? For the Colson Center for Christian Worldview, I'm John Stonestreet with The Point. Though Christmas items have been for sale in Walmart since late July, we're now officially approaching the holiday season. You know what that means? Family dinners, neighborhood gatherings, work parties. And you know what that means? Those awkward conversations about Christian convictions with folks that disagree. Are you dreading that outspoken aunt at Thanksgiving, that coworker in an alternative lifestyle, or the atheist neighbor? Not every conversation is a requirement to contend for the truth, but shouldn't we be prepared with an articulate, thoughtful, winsome defense? The Bible says yes. Do you need a case to defend religious liberty? Read the Manhattan Declaration. You need some clarity on how to defend human life? Read Scott Klusendorf's terrific book, A Case for Life. Need to explain or defend the historicity of the resurrection? Read N.T. Wright's Surprised by Hope or Gary Habermas's A Case for the Resurrection. Look, if you know that a conversation is even possible, preparation is mandatory. I'm John Stonestreet.
And well, having conversations on maybe difficult subjects is something that, you know, we're likely going to encounter around the holidays. But there's also a good possibility we're going to encounter maybe some of those difficult conversations revolve around an area of loss. And that's going to be our conversation today. We're going to spend some time talking with Miriam Neff. Glad to have her back with us on the air. And Miriam is founder and president of Widow Connection, and has several projects for widows in Africa and actually around the globe. Her little one-minute feature, New Beginnings, is heard in over 1,200 outlets. She's author of 10 books, including From One Widow to Another, Conversations on the New You, Women and Their Emotions, also a DVD series, One Widow to Another, The Connection That Counts. She's also written Where Do I Go From Here? Bold Living After Unwanted Change. Miriam's late husband, Bob, was a former vice president of Moody Broadcasting Network, and Miriam has a chance to contribute to Chris Fabry Live and other programs from time to time. We're honored to have her back with us here on Connecting Faith. Miriam, good to talk with you again.
I love to connect with you folks, and you know, I love partnerships. I love partnerships where we're looking out for each other's best interest, and I feel you guys have always done that, and that was from way back when, before we traveled to so many countries and did so many things that God has just done amazing things with this ministry. But that's what happens when he taps you on the shoulder and says, here's a problem. What are you going to do about it?
Mm. Well, the problem that you encountered was after a long illness. Your husband Bob passed away some years ago, and you have been living life as a widow. And obviously, there was a need there you saw, and out of that came Widow Connection. Maybe just fill us in a little bit of background.
Well, after Bob went to heaven, I was kind of searching to kind of connect with him in some different ways, and I went back to Africa. And they wanted me to teach while I was there to these widows because they knew I was one. And day after day, I met with these widows and opened the Word of God and taught them the stories of the widows in Scripture that are cross-cultural. And, you know, during that time, one night, and I'll never forget that night, it was like God tapping me on the shoulder. Now, I didn't feel a finger tap on my shoulder, but it's like, okay, look at the need here. What are you going to do about it? And then here in the States, I already knew from my own experience, people try to take advantage of you, you lose your friendship network and all of these things. And from that, we started with simply a website, Neil, only a website. And then when you introduced me and you said those things, I think, wow, Lord, you've really been busy in very good ways.
Miriam, holidays coming up, I mean, they can be difficult and challenging anyway. How is it complicated for someone who is experiencing a loss and facing those for the first time?
Well, we've lost so many of our friends, and some of the activities that we did before, we don't really want to go to those because we went as a couple. Sometimes we're not even invited, but sometimes we know we could go, but it doesn't feel happy and joyful, and that can be true with Christmas concerts or traditions we had at Thanksgiving. And family relationships sometimes juggle. Now, I can tell you, for me, it was 10 years ago. I've been single for 10 years. Things are good now, and there are things that I can do now comfortably I couldn't. So for some of your listeners where it's new and fresh, and they think, oh, my word, how can I get stable on my feet again? Let me just assure you, you'll be okay. But it doesn't happen as quickly as sometimes other people expect it to, and even we do. And I can tell you, new things come into your life to fill the void. That's one thing we wanted to mention. You know, you have a great organization up there, widowmite.org.
Mm-hmm.
They're having a dinner the Saturday before Thanksgiving. I'll be up there to be the guest speaker. And this is for widows. This is going to be a joyful, you know, great opportunity to connect and have good food, and hopefully I can encourage folks. And, you know, so there are new organizations cropping up to address this need. That doesn't mean it's going to make everything smooth that first or second year.
Now, you said it's been 10 years for you, but in that, you know, things will get better, but it's hard to just kind of be thinking about that when you're in the fog and the pain of grief. I've heard, you know, recommendations say don't make any major decisions right away. Is that good counsel?
That's still the good counsel. And some people decide, well, I've got to sell this property, or I've got to move here next to one child, or I'm so lonely, I'm going to remarry in the first year or before the second year is over. And I can't tell you, Neil, how many emails I get from people who've made those decisions and regret them. And that's why one of our general tips is, you know, don't make big decisions in that, you know, those first early times when you're grieving. And another thing that I say is be careful of your expectations. You know, if you expect all the friends you had before to still be the same kind of friends, that's not going to happen. And you mentioned the holidays and how hard that can be. With expectations, be really lower them and think, what I expected, the way things were before, it's not going to be that way. I can't make it that way. And if you lower those expectations and just say, Lord, help me be flexible, help me roll with things, help me realize it'll be different, it really makes the holidays so much better than if you're clinging to something that you think will happen and you can make happen and it doesn't.
You know, we I'm sure those of us that maybe know someone that we love and care about that's maybe experienced a loss, you know, we'd like the relationship to be the same. But as you said, it's not going to be. So should we be feeling guilty about that? Do you feel guilty about that? Say, well, yeah, it's just, you know, these people don't call me anymore, or I don't want to be the, you know, the fifth wheel or whatever it is.
First of all, I don't think guilt accomplishes anything. And one of the things you can do, let's say you're a couple, and another couple, the husband has died, which is statistically 8 out of 10 couples. That's what's going to happen first. You can still call, make a contact, and say, you know, I know that you would be involved as a couple in this event, but can we let you know you're still welcome, and can we pick you up? Or if that's not something that's comfortable, what can we do? You know, can we meet you for coffee or do something different? Just say, what can I do? Can I just come over and go on a walk with you? Or find out what her need is and then be willing to flex with that, because that's where we come to new opportunities and learn what is her need, what is his need, because they're widowers also. What are the needs there, and how can we meet those in a different way? Because the past is the past, and things will be different.
You mentioned 8 out of 10. Husbands will pass on first. Give us a little sense of, I mean, the reality of widowhood in our nation today.
Well, there are 13 million widowed people in the United States today, and 11 million of them are women. So, you know, let's just get some numbers out there. And 800,000 more widows will, 800,000 more women will become widows this year. Our average age is 56. So just to get a picture of that, it isn't that all the widows are in a couple of warm states and are older. 56, that represents, Neil, that many of the men that die are their firefighters, their policemen, their military, they're in construction. And so there are young widows in your churches, in your neighborhood, and they lose friendships. They don't know what they can go to again and be happy. Sometimes the church says, go to the single women's class. And my widows in my network, and the young ones especially that tell me this, they don't feel they fit in there. They didn't go through a divorce. They didn't go through abandonment. So I think just for your listeners, and Neil, thank you for doing this topic today, just for your listeners to realize that I think they'll have new eyes looking at the people around them.
We would love to have friends join the conversation. Maybe if you have just experienced loss, it's fresh to you, and you want to share a bit about your story, you have a question you'd like to ask Miriam, who has traveled this road for the past 10 years, has a wonderful ministry called Widow Connection, and she's written a number of books, ones that would be helpful to you, you know, including From One Widow to Another, Conversations on the New You, and Where Do I Go From Here, Bold Living After Unwanted Change. You can join us for those questions or comments or just sharing your journey a bit with us at 877-933-2484. That's 877-93-FAITH. Or if it's more convenient for you to just submit a question or comment online, you can go to our show page. You go to myfaithradio.com, then click on the Connecting Faith show page, and there's an email tab right there. You can submit your question there that way. And we'll talk more with Miriam Neff coming up. There's some 7 tips for widows. We'll have her review those a bit. Talk about, you know, vulnerabilities, all sorts of things. Some good things, too, is just as we head into the holidays, how we can be a bit more sensitive. Maybe we can open our homes and invite someone in that we know will be facing a difficult season here just ahead. So more on that coming up. Love to have you join the conversation with Miriam Neff at 877-93-FAITH. according to statistics, the reality is 800,000 people become widows or widowers yearly in the United States alone. And when that happens, every aspect of life changes, like it or not, ready or not. And we're talking about how to face the weeks, the months ahead, with God's grace and the confidence. Where do I go from here? Bold Living After Unwanted Change, the title of one of the books from Miriam Neff, who's founder and president of Widow Connection. You can find out more at widowconnection.com. She has a little daily one-minute radio feature as well called New Beginnings, and she's written a number of books, and we're honored to have her with us on Connecting Faith. We head toward the holidays. Miriam, one of the things that you came out with early on were just some kind of little tips for widows. There's seven or so of them. Why don't we just take a minute to review those right now?
Oh, great. Well, one of the things that I say is it's good to mention in whatever the setting, whether it's Thanksgiving or a Christmas gathering, it's okay for people to say to the widow, "I remember," and to say to her something about her husband, something they remember, maybe a joke that he liked or just anything about it. The reason I say don't hesitate to do that, some people think, well, I don't want to bring him up because it'll bring tears or it'll be sad and it's a time for happiness. But we're already thinking of that person we miss. So you're not going to bring to mind something that's not already on our mind. And it shows us you respect him, that you remember him. So an important tip is to go ahead and talk about that person and memories you might have. And, you know, there's nothing wrong with a few tears here and there.
True enough. Yeah. You remind us, as you kind of touched on that, you know, maybe we want to stay connected, but we probably need to be specific when we call, right?
Exactly. If you just say call if you need something, she will never pick up the phone.
Yeah.
So stay connected, and even if you suggest things for a while and get a no, don't give up, because there will be a time when she's more ready to do some of the things, and she may never. But like, for instance, I really don't care to go to a couple's Valentine dinner, even if there's a table full of just women. I just don't. That's just not me. So it's like, okay, thanks for the invitation, and someone else might want to do that. So continue. We mentioned that one of the greatest voids is that she loses so many of her friends, 75% of her friendship network, same percent for women who are divorced. That's a huge emptiness in her life. So to stay connected is really a blessing you give her.
Is there anything that we can do to you know, lower that number, or is that just going to be reality that, you know, we're just kind of that friendship network just changes whether we like it or not?
I think that number can be lowered. Now, you know, I'm an optimist, or I wouldn't go to Africa and Albania and Tirana and do the things that I do. But part of it is that sometimes people don't want to be around the single widow because it reminds them life is temporary, and I don't know what the future holds. And there may be other reasons as well. And, you know, I think as maturing believers and maturing people, we should be bigger than that. And, okay, this is a reality, but these are still people that God loves. And according to the Word of God, widows should be the greatest prayer people in the church. Widows should be generous, and it may not be big numbers, but generous. And the church loses that, and believers lose that if we just kind of say, okay, I don't know what to say to them, or I don't know what to do, because 50% of the widows are no longer in the church they were in with their husband 1 year after their husband leaves this planet. 50% are not there anymore. That's another loss, and I think we all can work together on that.
Which I guess is a good reminder that churches have a real opportunity to provide some ministry for those widows that are maybe, you know, looking for a new place. They're kind of drifting truly alone, and so say a word about what does a church outreach to widows look like?
Well, first of all, I say note who they are, and on my website, widowconnection.com, I talk about how to start a ministry in your church, And I have free downloads, like survey the women, the widows in your church to see what are their needs. We've done that, and groups have done that all over the United States. In some areas, they need someone to help them care for their living space, you know, someone that can show up with a hammer or a paintbrush. Some need financial counseling because they have less to live on. They don't know how to do that. But your church finds out what they need, and then you start there. Now, we also know they need connection, and if you don't have someone who can lead a widow's groups, as you mentioned earlier, we have a DVD series. All you have to have a group is someone who will push the play button, and I would suggest a pot of hot water for tea or coffee. But that way, those of us on the DVD talk about these issues, and then there are questions in a journal, and you can talk about it afterwards. And it's a healing thing, Neil. It's like finding out you're not alone.
Mm. You know, you mentioned financial counseling. I know you and I think is it your daughter-in-law have done some things just talking about this pretty strategic and important area.
Yes, actually, it's my daughter. She is an attorney and also becoming a certified financial planner. And we've done some programs that are available online. And in fact, for instance, we have six available, and a network such as yours can do them on a Saturday or whatever. They're 24 minutes. And we also have some plans to expand on that because we were finding one of the number one needs for widows has to do with their finances. If they have a lot, they don't know how to manage it and feel ill-informed. And if they have a little, they don't know how to really budget and what they can do to change their outgo to match their income. So Widow Connection, that's a high priority for next year, and hopefully your listeners will pray for us. We need guidance to pursue that.
You find out more at widowconnection.com, widowconnection.com. And as you mentioned, for those in the Minneapolis-St. Paul area, Marion, you'll be coming up to share at an event, the Widows Might organization. That's Widow Might. Is it widowmight.org?
Yes, and if you go to the website, you can click on events, and you can still sign up for it, and it gives you the details and all of that. And as you know, Neil, I love a good partnership. I mean, that's what I feel with your network, thanks to past relationships of your people with Bob. But I'm loving finding other widows ministries around the states that are maybe newer and just getting started, and I want to encourage them and say, yeah, you know, you're local. Do what you can do, and that's what we're going to represent when we're in Minneapolis Saturday, November 19th.
Saturday, November 19th. We'll get a connection on that so people can find out more about it. We've got more ahead with Miriam Neff as we talk widows and how to encourage each other. We'll get some thoughts maybe just about, you know, facing the holidays, how we might do things a little bit differently, and get good advice from Miriam Neff, founder and president of Widow Connection and the author. You can find out more on her website, widowconnection.com. You can join us. You have a question or a comment? You want to share your story? I'd love to have you join in at 877-93-FAITH. Lost a mate, a love of a lifetime. God has not abandoned us, and we want to make that message clear. From One Widow to Another, Conversations in the New You is the title of one of Miriam Neff's books. She's written 10 or so. Where Do I Go From Here? Bold Living After Unwanted Change. She's also a DVD series, One Widow to Another, The Connection That Counts. Former high school counselor and teacher, and teaches Bible studies for widows. She's founder and president of Widow Connection. You can find out more at widowconnection.com. And we're talking today about life alone, maybe facing the holidays for the first time. And, Miriam, let's talk a little bit about that. Not too long, it'll be Thanksgiving, Christmas soon after that. What did you change that first year or two, or what was maybe most challenging for you at the holidays?
Well, for one thing, we had to flex from some traditions because one of my children, rather than being with family at that first Thanksgiving, decided to serve in a soup kitchen. And he and his wife did that. And at first, I'm like, hurt. What about this? And then I was having to learn things would be different, whether they were different, and I had to accept that. Now, I can say as time has gone by, that has changed. But for the widows listening, just be willing to accept that something will be different, and it's better to accept it. And even if you feel you need to forgive someone because that hurts you, they don't need to ask for it. Just forgive them because you will be happier from your willingness to flex and see some people that might not make a certain number of mile trips because someone's not going to be there. These are realities, and they might not be permanent, but we need to just be ready for that kind of thing to happen and be okay with it.
You know, talk about being willing to kind of forgive. I'm thinking, too, this probably needs to offer a word of encouragement that we always don't know what to say, and so we probably say things that are inappropriate or you know, maybe not really encouraging. So what's your advice there about, you know, what we say, what we don't say?
Guard your heart from your ears. In other words, someone may say, oh, I miss him so much, and they're a remote relative that saw him twice a year. And you're the person that lived with him, and you want to scream at them and say, no, you don't understand, and you don't miss him as much as I do. Well, and I'm exaggerating, Neil, but you know what I'm saying. In other words, just realize people will say whatever comes to mind, or maybe later on they'll wish they hadn't said it, but they're kind of don't know what to say. And I just say, I was thinking of you, or give them a hug. Don't, you know, blather out something just to say something.
Do you, did you jump in and try some new things right away, or did you, you know, sort of maybe cocoon, or, I mean, I think the reaction maybe is just to pull away or to isolate. How hard was it to kind of break out and to be willing to try something new?
Well, in terms of traditions, we didn't try new things, but I had to realize people might not participate in as many of the traditions, and it might be that it would be hard for them to show up and see Dad's not here. And those things have just changed, and I've just learned to be happy with the connections I have and the family connections that I have and let go of those that I can't. You cannot make things like they were before. Yes, I have an ornament that's special for Bob that we didn't have before that I made now, and it goes on the tree every year. And some of the things Bob and I attended together, certain music-oriented things, nothing yet has filled in that void, but it's okay. So my ministry has taken so much time and energy and is so positive. I would say in a way for me, God showing me other things he wanted me to do has filled in some of those voids, Neil, and that has been a real comfort and blessing.
Is there a? Did you deal with any pressure to say, "Well, I'm not ready to try something new yet"? Maybe you know, God has given you an opportunity to go and serve in some unique ways, but that doesn't mean that you might have resisted a little bit, I guess, at the beginning, and we don't want to push people past their grief, allow them time to grieve, right?
Well, here's where my counseling background, I would say, has come in and been helpful for me and people I've talked to. Grieving goes on in different ways for a long time. And yes, the twinge of it lessens, and it is less. But one of the principles we know is true, you do not wait to start doing other things or to start volunteering or serving till you feel you've done your grief work. If that were the case, you might never do these new things that God has for you to do, which are actually good for you. The healing is better and more thorough if you are going about doing what God has for you to do that day. And I'm, you may, someone may be listening saying, oh, I don't know that I agree with that. Well, you don't need to. I can just tell you it's a fact. And if you put your foot in the water to do that new thing that you're being nudged to do, it isn't going to halt your grief process. It isn't going to interfere with your grief process. But it will bring you comfort as you go through adjusting to what you no longer have.
You sadly, even though maybe we think widows are older, and as you say, the average age is 56, but susceptible in some ways, I guess, maybe to, everybody's susceptible to scams and things. Any words of warning that you'd like to pass on?
Oh, absolutely. You have to carefully vet any financial person giving you advice. I have a whole chapter in From One Widow to Another on that, and the scams are prevalent, and someone did try to do something with me to take advantage of me within the first month having to do with finances. So it's real, and you have to find a few trusted people that you share possible decisions with so that you're not alone and vulnerable to someone that realizes you're lonely and you lack information. Those are the kind of sources of scams. And the holiday season is one where there are people that are just ready to take advantage of you. So you need those wise people around you. You can't share your financial situation with everybody, and even strangers in the church who have a good title. It has to be people that have your back and are wise and have managed their own finances well. Family members want to advise you. Well, look at how they've done with their finances, and you might listen to them and say, thank you for sharing, and that's that. But, again, making speedy decisions before you have information like we talked about earlier will help a long way in preventing that kind of thing.
Well, we want to be able to move on from more than just survival, although that's certainly important and understandable, but, that there is hope on the other side of a big loss like this, isn't there?
Well, there is. And, you know, the loneliness of having the void of that person, we have to be careful what we fill that void with. And it's easy at the holiday time to fill it with retail therapy and shopping and buying too many gifts for people that we're afraid we'll lose contact with if we're not over generous. And that's not what the void is about. That void is about going to God and saying, I need you to fill that void. Help me feel totally healed and whole before I get involved in any other kind of relationship. And God is the only one that can fill that void appropriately. Everything else, whether it's buying stuff for yourself or buying stuff for people or trying to fill that with another person, is going to have more negatives than positives. And I think, Neil, this season is a time where those things are a bigger temptation. We think everybody else is happy and celebrating, and there we are lonely at night, and I say get a really good book and a really good cup of tea and relish your solitude.
Yes.
Instead of wallowing in loneliness.
Well, you'll find more encouragement at Miriam's website, widowconnection.com, and I recommend it to you, maybe just pass it on to a friend that you know that needs some hope and encouragement, because Miriam offers that on a regular basis. She's founder and president of Widow Connection and serves widows really around the globe in some very wonderful ministries, has written a number of books, including Where Do I Go From Here? Bold Living After Unwanted Change and From One Widow to Another. And you can find out more about all those resources on our website, widowconnection.com. And Miriam, always good to talk with you. I want to wish you God's best and blessings during the upcoming holiday season.
And may you have a blessed holiday season again. Always good to connect with you, Neil.
Miriam Neff joining us today on Connecting Faith. And to find out more on our website, widowconnection.com.
It's more than I can bear.
shift gears for the next few minutes. We're talking about widows. We're going to talk about cities next and an event that happened not long ago. At the end of last month, thousands of Christian leaders gathered from around the globe in New York City for Movement Day 2016. The focus was on global cities. And to find out about Movement Day, we've connected with Dr. Mac Peer. Mac is the founder and CEO of the New York City Leadership Center and was instrumental in founding the inaugural Movement Day conference back in 2010. Since then, it has spread like a movement. We want to find out more. Mac, tell us, what is Movement Day?
Well, thanks, Neil. Movement Day really grew out of some research that my organization, along with Tim Keller's church, Redeemer Presbyterian, commissioned in 2009. We saw the growth of evangelical Christianity in Manhattan over at that time, a 20-year period of about 300%. And with that research, we thought it'd be important to create a conversation around the question of what is God doing in major cities. And that led to the birth of Movement Day in 2010 in New York. Movement Day Global Cities, which happened just 2 weeks ago, attracted leaders from 95 nations. We had about 3,000 leaders that came, and it was done collaboratively with the Lausanne Movement. One of my roles is the catalyst for cities for Lausanne, as well as with the Global Leadership Summit led by the Willow Creek Association. So Movement Day Global Cities brought leaders together from around the world to really celebrate what God is doing in big cities, to learn about the greatest challenges facing cities around the globe, and to introduce best practices to create catalytic growth in those cities.
Well, when we talk big cities, I mean, if we're in rural areas, we maybe don't have a full grasp of what's happening in terms of moving to the cities. I mean, it's happening dramatically over these last years, isn't it?
It's the greatest demographic shift in human history. 1.5 million people are moving into sizable cities every week, which means there's really the birth of a new San Francisco or a new Singapore every month. And the three great realities that face the world today, a majority of people live in sizable cities, a majority of the world are under the age of 25, and a majority of the world lives on less than $2 a day.
So talk about how is the church prepared to have an impact and an influence in the city? I mean, I know that one of your goals is to see Christianity sort of gain traction, and yet it probably isn't the case right now, is it, in most major cities?
Yeah, in most major cities, especially when you get to what we call a city center, like places like Dubai or Singapore or Mumbai, many of the great mega cities, in most mega cities, the Christian community is not as large or influential as it needs to be. And so when we gather around Movement Day, what we are attempting to do is really answer three questions. Where are we today on a given issue, which is really the research question? The second question is a vision question. Where do we want to be in 10 years? And the third question is a tactical question. What do we need to do in the next year? And we've learned that it's really important to apply good research to our strategy, the necessity of collaborative models. We really believe that the unity of the church is, I consider to be one of the three great doctrines of the church, and that we really believe that disunity in the church breeds atheism in the world. And so our deep conviction is that if we can bring the body of Christ together relationally, intelligently, spiritually, that all kinds of things get catalyzed out of that vision and commitment. And we've seen it in powerful ways across many cities in the last 6 years.
Well, just obviously fresh on our minds is an election that happened pretty dramatically and maybe surprisingly, but I guess it is a reminder that God could bring about transformation in a relatively short time, too, if people were actually engaged and committed to following his principles.
Well, it's interesting. The language that President-elect Trump uses around his campaign is a movement. And whether people like or dislike him as a leader, he was very effective in his messaging, rallying people around some core ideas. And we think that cities are so critical. If a big idea takes root in a big city, it spreads around the world. And that's why we really believe cities like New York and London. London will have its first Movement Day next year. We've been in Dallas for 3 years. Phoenix is getting started. Charlotte will get started. Big ideas that take root in big cities, just like when you read the New Testament. The New Testament was really the story of Jesus dying in Jerusalem as the religious capital of the world and Paul dying in Rome as the political capital of the world. And their deaths in these cities were not geographic accidents, that God really has a plan to reach the world by impacting big cities.
So give us a little sense. I mean, Movement Day started back in 2010, and you've been gathering, I guess, the movement has been growing ever since. It's going around the globe. But what's maybe the most encouraging story or example of how God is beginning to work in some fresh new ways in the cities?
I'll start with Manhattan, because Manhattan was really the initial impetus behind Movement Day, when we saw Christianity grow by 300% in 20 years. And then in the next 5 years, after we did the initial research, we saw it grow from 300 to 500% in 5 years. So it took 20 years to grow by 300%, and then it took 5 years to grow 500%. And at the end of the day, it really is about the gospel. We want people to come to faith, and that's really critical. In Dallas, one of the most encouraging signs was to see a new organization birthed out of Movement Day called Initiative, led by a 26-year-old, really rallying other young people to be a part of missional community in Dallas. And that's significant, since as many as 70% of young people are leaving the church upon adulthood. We were very encouraged to see this kind of young leadership emerging, because we think the biggest idea is to reach young leaders in big cities regarding the future of the church.
When you look at, you know, the future of the church in big cities, are the issues the same that we hear about, whether it's politics or economics or any of those things? What are the big concerns that the church needs to be poised to address?
Yeah, that's a great question. There is a tremendous economic divide between the rich and the poor. Poor people come to cities in the hope of a better future. So there's the economic issue, and usually attached to that are educational divides. In the U.S., the big issue, we're the incarceration capital of the world. We have 25% of the prison population. In the African-American community, there are more African-Americans in prison today than people that were enslaved before the beginning of the Civil War. And so these are all huge gaps that we say what the church needs are the smartest people with the biggest hearts in the room, and really willing to think creatively. And we need all sectors. We certainly need the church, but we also need the intelligent involvement of local government. We need the marketplace community deeply involved. It's going to take everybody of goodwill to work together to address some of these enormous challenges.
And is there a willingness to collaborate among, marketplace leaders or political leaders, or has the church been sort of marginalized and say, well, they don't really have a place at the table?
Well, we're seeing some signs of hope. When we had the Dallas shootings July 7th, I was very pleased. Mayor Rawlings, first two people he called were African-American pastor and a white pastor that we had brought together through Movement Day. And they were really the voice of reconciliation in Dallas. And the morning after the shootings, Mayor Rawlings did a telecast. I saw it on CNN, and the clergy standing behind him represented a third of all the congregants in Dallas. And that really represented a really good partnership between the mayor's office and the church. And we really want to see more and more of that. One of our big allies in Movement Day is Mayor Good from Philadelphia, first African-American mayor there. And he helped shepherd a team of 140 Philadelphia leaders that came to Movement Day a couple of weeks ago. And Philadelphia is one of the most challenged big cities in America. And we really are eager to see some of the ideas that will emerge from these leaders meeting each other and really working together.
Mac, you've just released a new book called The Disruptive Gospel, Stories and Strategies for Transforming Your City. Say a bit about why the gospel is disruptive, or how should it maybe be different than what it is impacting now?
Yeah, the idea of the gospel disrupting, when you think about it, especially when you read the New Testament, when the gospel comes into a person's life or into a city, it completely turns it upside down. When you read the book of Acts, and you see city after city where the early disciples and then the Apostle Paul, you read Acts 19, the story of Ephesus. I mean, Paul shows up, he turns the medical institutions upside down, he turns the religious institutions upside down, he turns the governmental institutions upside down. And the idea is that if the gospel is alive in a person's life or in the context of a city, things change. It's radical. It compels people. You know, one of the things that we need to continue to cultivate in our lives as we mature as Christians is we need to really develop what Bill Hybels calls a holy discontent around things that are really unsatisfactory from a kingdom perspective. And we need to just radically commit ourselves to those things. And the gospel is disruptive. If our lives haven't changed in the last year or two, we're believers, then we need to ask the question, where does God want to use us to disrupt the status quo somewhere else?
I hope even as we've talked today, there's someone listening has been just prompted to say, there's a holy discontent within me, and I see an opportunity to make a difference in the city. I want to learn more. Talk about where they could connect, find out about the Movement Days, because they're spreading around globally. But I know that you've got resources available, and also find out about your book.
Sure. So MovementDay.com is a website to learn about Movement Day. We're going to be creating a Movement Day Institute over the next year where city leaders can come and learn principles and how to count. The book, A Disruptive Gospel, it's published by Baker Press. It's on the Amazon or Barnes & Noble's website. And in the book, we tell the story of what God is doing in 11 different cities around the world. But I think it's a fairly good overview of some of the themes in cities around the world. And I think for those of us who want to be Christians who are thoughtful and knowledgeable, it really is important for us to become conversant with the major global trends regarding urbanization and what God is doing in the world.
Mac Pierre has been in the middle of it for a number of years, helping us see more clearly about what God is doing in the cities. He's written a new book called A Disruptive Gospel, Stories and Strategies for Transforming Your City. And he is the founder and CEO of the New York City Leadership Center, and instrumental in founding the inaugural Movement Day Conference. The Movement Day 2016 just happened here a couple weeks ago. Find out more at movementday.com. Mac, thanks so much for the update today.
Thanks so much, Neil. Thanks for having me on.
Well, what would happen to our cities if 10% or more people became vibrant Christians working together for the good of the community? That would be a great project, a great goal, a great prayer request here for the next 100 days or so as we get ready for the new president and to be able to come in and see God at work in the cities. Much needed. Tomorrow on Connecting Faith, Joe Bender is going to talk with Robia Scott. You heard Miriam Neff talking about retail therapy. Well, maybe that's an issue for you. If you're searching for joy, peace, and inner satisfaction through chemicals or TV or retail therapy, well, then you're dealing with counterfeit comforts. And we're going to talk about that tomorrow. Counterfeit comforts is the topic. Join us for Connecting Faith here on Faith Radio and find out more online at myfaithradio.com.